and you'll be sorry someday. The thrill is gone, it's gone away from me. The thrill is gone, baby. The thrill is gone away from me.
Can't think of a more defining blues man than B.B. King, one of the true greats, and passed away at the age of 89. An amazing voice, an amazing guitar player.
Just a presence.
An amazing presence. And here was a guy who gave so much to his audience, to the world through the music. But so much through education, would go to schools and work with kids and just countless hours. Just an amazing guy and presence. And
did you ever see him?
Yeah, he was over at he played over at St. Rose. Yeah, and
I saw him in the late 70s at SPAC.
Yeah.
Oh,
I saw him over at the Palace. Did you ever see him?
No, actually, I did not.
He was just my God.
I loved him.
Alan, you ever see B.B. King?
I did not, but one thing that a lot of people don't know is that, you know, he was diabetic and had a tremendous presence trying to cure the disease, and appeared, I believe, with our own Greg Garrity, who runs, you know, who's one of the top doctors in our area in the region, and was doing that kind of important work also.
Well, it's, again, we were just playing some music going in, but it was... a loss. We knew he was ailing but 89 years old and brought a lot of wonderful music, which I'm sure we'll be hearing throughout the morning, I think.
He reminded me in many ways, not musically, but of Miles Davis, because the economy of notes, and one note meant everything, and if you heard one note, you knew who it was, and it was just like Miles in that way. Just not a wasted note did he play. It was a beautiful thing.
It seems to me that there are a few people that the minute they hit the guitar string,
yeah,
you know who it is, and he was one of those guys.
Not the most technically flashy person in the world, but neither was Miles.
He didn't have to be. Let me introduce everyone to the group this, or let me introduce you to the group this morning, and then we'll invite you to join us for the program. We have WAMC's Alan Chartok with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Very nice to have you here. Newsman Ray Graff is here as well.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. And essayist, author, editor, and activist Barbara Smith is with us. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you.
As well. As always, let's invite our listeners to get in on the act. Roundtable at WAMC.org if you would like to email us a note or two on the many topics that we're going to discuss this morning. You can also comment on our webpage, WAMC.org/roundtable. Today's post, 5:15:15, 5:15:15. It's the WAMC.org/roundtable, and then you can comment on the website there. Or roundtable at WAMC.org. Okay, so let's get into the news of the day and what's happening in this world of ours. And always sort of somewhat fraught when we start off like that. But we'll begin by the continuing investigation of Amtrak. And Amtrak says that safety system was delayed by wireless access. The railroad said that technical and regulatory roadblocks had delayed operation of the system, which might have prevented this week's crash. But then again, it still wouldn't have been in, you know, if whatever happened, obviously, and they're still getting to the bottom of that, of the speed. The New York Times points out today that the train speed was normal until just minutes before it derailed, and then the train speed increased very rapidly, very quickly. And so we're still getting to the bottom of that. I will note that I think there is an incredible amount of the tabloids seem to be really going after the engineer. I don't know. We don't know a lot about that story yet, I think, but there's a lot of speculation. And
well, it's easy to make assumptions, and it's easy to make to speculate. But the fact remains that 65 seconds before the crash, it was within tolerance. It was at the right speed.
Right.
And then 12 seconds later, it was 80 miles an hour. 12 seconds after that, it was 100 miles an hour. And so why? I guess that's the big question.
Sure. Alan, what do you think?
Well, you know, I think Ray's exactly on point, as always. I mean, We can assume that.
Cut it out! Stop it!
You're too much. Okay, so no, we can assume that some kind of an error here. The first thing that comes to my head, and of course it isn't fair, is the plane that goes down. And we find out later that, there was somebody doing, operator error intentional. Now, what bothers me about this is that we don't have any, he's not cooperating. Why isn't he cooperating? Why isn't he saying, yeah, you know, I was in there, maybe I fell asleep, maybe this happened, maybe that happened. But no, he immediately gets a lawyer and he immediately clams up. And that, of course, is his right under the Constitution and everything else. But he's just—it just raises more questions.
Well, given how technically and astute and excellent it seems that the NTSB is, I assume that they're going to find out what happened. I mean, the way that this investigation is being handled is so methodical and so forthright. It seems it doesn't seem like there's a huge level of confusion on their part, and. It's just so tragic. That's the thing that always bothers me about these things, not like the parsing of like the whys and the wherefores. Although, of course, that is it positive train control system. If that had been in place, who knows how this might have been different.
It's also a we should note, and I think you reported this in the newscast, that the train service has resumed, correct?
Yes, it's resumed from New York to Boston.
Yes.
The Philadelphia leg will not probably be back until Monday.
For a little bit.
Yeah.
As the investigation obviously continues. We welcome your thoughts on this roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable@WAMC.org. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in a moment for some more topics. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Barnstars Antiques at Rhinebeck, a Memorial Day tradition presenting over 120 exhibitors of period antiques to mid-century modern appraisals and more. May 23rd and 24th, barnstar.com. Neptune's Harvest, organic fertilizers from nutrient-rich ingredients including fish, seaweed, and crab shell from the North Atlantic Ocean, available in bulk for farms and retail sizes for home gardening. Neptune'sHarvest.com. Hudson Valley Federal Credit Union, a local financial cooperative offering business checking, commercial loans, online banking, and more, hvfcu.org. And J&A Roofing, specializing in shingle, metal, and flat roofs throughout the Hudson Valley since 1938. JARoofing.com for online estimate.
I really have paid my dues. When I first got the blues, they brought me over on a ship. Standing over me, and a lot more with the whip, man. Everybody wanna know why I sing the blues. Well, I've been around a long time. I've really paid my dues. I've laid in the ghetto flats, cold and numb. I heard the rats tell the bedbugs to
Give the roaches some. Everybody wanna know why I'm singing the blues. Yes, I've been around a long time. People, I've paid my dues. I stood in line down at the county hall. I heard a man say, we're gonna build some new apartments for y'all. And everybody wanna know.
Deal. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable, listening to some great music from B.B. King, who passed away yesterday at the age of 89. It's our Roundtable panel this morning. Ray Graff is here, Barbara Smith, and of course, Alan Chartok. And we welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan, do we have a letter or two?
We do, as you have correctly surmised. We have one from Bob. It's hard to believe, but conservative talk show hosts, including Fox, are claiming there is a gay angle to the crash because the engineer once supported a great gay rights initiative in California. No, really? One of Fox's idiot commentators said that the gender confusion may have distracted him. You can't make this stuff up, but they sure can. Bob from Albany. So, well, we just read them. We don't know. Yeah.
So gender.
And Jane says.
Well, hold on. What were you going to say, Barbara?
No, I just want to say, so gender confusion is also like a cognitive issue and an eyesight issue and a judgment issue. Well, anyway, let's move on.
So Jane writes, good morning, Dr. Chartok, for the roundtable. I wonder if Amtrak trains and maybe Metro North should have two engineers or a second person, like an engineer and a training type person in the engineer's car. Perhaps there already is one. Thanks for thinking of this on the roundtable, Jane, and Jane from Poughkeepsie and Cold Spring.
I still think it's too early.
Idea, you know.
I still think it's too early to point fingers. The CNN, I believe, had an interview with a conductor who worked with this engineer for a long time. And said, this guy always was on point. Always, if there was a question, he didn't assume I'm the engineer I know. He would ask. He would make the calls. He was very detail-oriented. So let's not point fingers until we know. And then if we know, we'll point the finger.
And I should have said...
Well, no, I think that... Yeah.
I should have said
ahead, Barbara,
gender
sorry.
Identity doesn't cause eyesight problems or lack of judgment. The Fox apparently used the term gender confusion, but let's just be perfectly clear that sexuality does not influence one's capacities to do anything.
And Alan, your
right.
point?
I think that if we think now that there should be two people in the cockpit on a plane, it makes a certain amount of sense. I think Jane had a point that you have a second, considering the potential disasters that can happen, makes sense to have another eye or ear there.
I'm all for backup.
And Beth says, this is a train on a track with a professional driver. Just imagine walking under drones piloted by who knows who. And then Peter says, no one has explained why the system to prevent these crashes is so expensive. Can't they use GPS technology? My GPS does not need a broadcasting frequency to warn me that I'm over the speed limit. It knows where I am and how fast I'm going and sounds a warning. The technology should be available to link the circuit that sounds a warning to one that shows the train indeed. Isn't that interesting? Because, you know, I have GPS in my Prius, and I must say it doesn't tell me if I'm over the speed limit.
No, and you still get lost, so it doesn't really work that well for you.
It doesn't always have the right way to go, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And is that
okay,
it?
Okay, so that's what I got.
Okay.
I believe so. Yeah, I believe so.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll note that the breaking news just in a few moments ago that the U.S. Marines say that they believe that there will be no survivors in the crash of the chopper that was headed to Nepal to aid in the rescue efforts there, which is a tragedy as well. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about other issues. We'll talk about George Stephanopoulos. And I think anytime you can get to say Stephanopoulos,
right,
that's fun. So we'll do that after the short break.
And have you heard that I thought my life had ended? But I find that it's just begun. 'Cause she gets me where I live. I'll give all I have to give. I'm talking about that hummingbird. Oh, she's little and she loves me too much for words to say. When I see her in the morning sleeping, she's little and she loves me too. My lucky day, I'm a bird, don't fly away.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel. And of course, playing B.B. King this morning. And he, after learning of his passing yesterday at the age of 89, we welcome your comments on all the issues that we talk about this morning. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff, Barbara Smith. I'm Joe Donahue. And again, we do welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let us talk for a moment about George Stephanopoulos and the kerfuffle that he is currently in.
Kerfuffle.
And a kerfuffle. So obviously, here is a guy who worked in the Clinton administration, was an operative, worked in the campaign in 1992 for Bill Clinton out of Arkansas. Stephanopoulos, a young kid, and was worked with communications in the communication department when he was elected president, then left, went on to a career in journalism, working with ABC News, has done the This Week program, is currently now doing Good Morning America. Many, many times he has been called into question because of his ties to the Clintons. And this came up, I believe, last year. Was it last year that it came up about him doing a debate? They were going to have him moderate a debate. And they said, well, look, he's clearly works for the Democratic Party. We don't want him doing a debate. So they said, all right, forget that. And it's come up several times where during the coverage that they felt they were getting an unfair shake. Even though he and the network have said, you know, we stand by our guy and we think that he can make be very impartial in his decision making. Then on Thursday, let me just finish the setup here. But on Thursday, the question of Stephanopoulos's political leanings and his future as a leader of the network ABC and their campaign coverage spilled out into the open as he acknowledged donating $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation over the past 3 years. He withdrew from playing any role in a planned Republican primary debate on ABC and called his donations an uncharacteristic lapse. Alan, go.
Well, first of all, you would think he would know better than that. You know, if you have to be as clean as can be in something like this, and he apparently gave a great deal of money to the Clinton Foundation.
$75,000.
And he acknowledges that he probably shouldn't have done it, and he shouldn't have done it. I mean, it's really quite that simple. As for ABC, they've got a leader now. They're winning in the ratings, in crucial ratings. They've named him the chief correspondent, the chief anchor. But, you know, I don't know if this is germane or not, but I've often had a little bit of an issue with him. Late Mario Cuomo told me on the telephone one day that Clinton and he didn't get along that well, and that Clinton had no intention whatsoever of elevating him to the Supreme Court, even though they kept saying they were going to do it. And shortly thereafter, Cuomo wrote a letter saying, "Please take me off your short list," which I always found suspect. Stephanopoulos writes a book, and it's very popular. And the number one thing that he says is, we had it all set. We could never figure out why Mario pulled out. Well, if Mario was to be believed in this, and Stephanopoulos was claiming that he was sort of carrying the water on all of this, it bothered me a lot, because I thought that if Mario was telling the truth, and I had no reason to believe he wasn't, that Stephanopoulos was being disingenuous.
I don't know.
Not on point. Yeah.
Well, no, it's fine. It certainly gets into the character. I guess my thought on this, and this is muddled, and I don't really quite know how I feel about it. I do think that if you are friendly with someone, if you look at the Clinton Foundation not as a political group, but as a group that is trying to do good in the world. And you also look that you are not, he's the anchor of Good Morning America. I mean, it's an entertainment program. He's doing makeup tips, for God's sakes. I mean, I don't know. Yes, he has also been asked to do these other things. I don't know that I see the giant problem. I understand the concern. But you know, if somebody comes to you and says, look, we're working on this foundation so that we can try to eradicate disease in this country, and we're looking for money for this effort, and you give that and it's tied to your former boss, I don't know.
But if you work for news, aren't there any number of other avenues that you can try to accomplish those goals? Any place you can give your money that isn't tied, at least in some way, to a political figure with a potential future?
I guess, sure. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, obviously, if there was more of a quid pro quo where you said, okay, you know, I'm going to give you $75,000 and you're going to give me these interviews or whatever the case may be, then yeah, obviously, that's I have great concern over that. Taking it on the face, and maybe this is horribly naive of me, I don't know, but if it seems to me that if you are, you know, you have friends, you have alliances, you have money, he's a well-paid man, and somebody comes and says, we're working on this project, can we sign you up to put this in, and you do, you know, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, I agree with Alan.
I don't know. I think, go ahead.
Yeah, we're not visually... able to see each other. I'm so sorry, Alan. But I was going to say, I agree with you, because it just seems to me that someone who is as politically involved and politically experienced as he is, might he give this a moment's thought? And then, of course, he could not anticipate the kind of scrutiny that the Clinton Foundation is getting now as Hillary Clinton runs for president. So it's both like hindsight and foresight or whatever. But I just find it, what I can't get is, like, why didn't he give this a moment, sort of, how does it appear, whether it's a good thing to do or not, the charitable, goals. I'm sure that's not something that can be questioned, in, at least in the aspect of the foundation, perhaps, that he was supporting. But
I agree. And how it appears is what ABC should have been thinking about when they decided to put him on. He's anchored newscasts, correct?
He still is on This Week. He still has weekly news show, the counterpart of Meet the Press, right?
So I think that to some extent, I guess that's a news analysis.
But you knew that when you hired him. Like, you knew what his background was.
But that hiring him in the beginning was an appearance.
Absolutely.
Was an appearance of not impropriety, but certain perhaps questionable judgment.
And the same thing could be said for in the hiring of, look, how many of these guys? Bill Moyer, Tim Russert.
Morning Joe.
Yes.
Morning Joe.
Joe Scarborough. I mean, so many of these guys have had political connections of either in office or working within the administration. Chris Matthews. So, I mean, certainly that, I don't think that that is not rare.
No, but I think it's how you use them. In other words, Chris Matthews, he's on a blab show. They analyze, yes, and they talk.
Yes.
So, but if you cross that line where you are anchoring news, different story. If you're anchoring or hosting a debate or moderating a debate, completely different story and a completely different sniff test, if you will, than hosting Good Morning America, which, as you say, mostly infotainment.
I guess my only issue here, and my concern, or not concern, but my thought on it, and Alan, I'm interested in what you think about this, but it just seems to me that all of this seems to be coming from Fox and the Washington Times, and God knows how much money have they given to the Republican Party.
Yeah, but I think, Joe, that the acid test here is not what he did before, but what he does after. I mean, I think that that's the issue. Now, a lot of this is what Mario used to call post hoc propta hoc. In other words, we now know a thing or two about the Clinton Foundation. Sure, people give money just the way that people give money to politicians. And then after the fact, some people get something out of it. Bill Clinton gets these speaking engagements for $500,000, I think, maybe even $1 million as a result of some of all of this. So therefore, I think that he knows he did the wrong thing. And it's that simple. He just shouldn't have done it after the fact, after he was doing this job.
So what goes, where do we go from here, do you think?
With him?
Yeah.
No debates, certainly.
Well, no, and I don't think he should have ever done debates.
So, Good Morning America. Why don't you have him on the round table?
Well, he's going to continue. He's going to continue to do his thing. And they are not going to give him up. This is not Brian Williams yet. One of the things that happens with all of these, as this stuff happens, is that, you know, people start really looking very hard. Maybe we'll learn something that we don't know. But right now, they say they're sticking with him, just like the Republican conference said they were sticking with Dean Skelos, just like the Assembly Democrats said they were sticking with Shelley Silver. You never know until a little time goes by.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll go to another topic or two. We welcome, we'll also go to your letters. We welcome you to write us, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from Emmerich Sales and Service, serving the Capital Region, providing new or used compact tractors, lawn tractors, and handheld equipment by Kubota, Yanmar, Cub Cadet, Toro, and more since 1968. EmmerichSales.com. Mr. Ruder Plumbing, accepting applications for qualified and professional technicians to perform plumbing services, 845-635-2102. Spirit House, Amherst, Massachusetts, a family-owned wine, beer, and spirits retailer, offering organically farmed wines from around the world. Wine tastings Saturday afternoons, spirithaus.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op in Albany, New York, hosting a public strategic planning event. honestweight.coop/community events for details.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Friday, the 15th of May. Very nice to have you with us on the program this morning. We have many letters. We'll get to those, and then we will get to another topic or two. Alan.
Well, first of all, you got some praise here, Joe.
Uh-oh.
Nancy says, wouldn't it be nice if the world were like Joe D's ideas rather than the cynics? Mario was not like Caesar's wife either, and that was from Nancy. And Margaret says, many newscasters belong to the Council of Foreign Relations, a group about world domination. Fair. And R says, hello, everyone, and good morning. B.B. King was... That's right. B.B. King was the blues music, as our beloved Pete was the folk music. Thank you for playing some of his music today. May he rest in peace. And Jeff says, Amtrak and its predecessors had a second person that cared for over a century, but pressure from above to reduce costs brought about a labor agreement in the 1980s to allow only one person on runs under a threshold length. Since then, trains on many railroads have logged millions upon millions of miles with only one person, and there's no evidence that a second person would have substantially reduced risk. And by the way, a couple of people have pointed out the firemen, you know, that there used to be firemen. Those firemen were there to put coal in, just like John Henry, right?
Right.
But there used to be something called feather bedding. Remember that, guys?
Oh yeah, sure.
And feather bedding meant you had more than one person that you didn't need in the cab. Anyway, okay. So Michael says, "Hey, Alan, post hoc ergo propter hoc. After this, this therefore because of this is considered untrue and illogical." And that's from Michael. and Rich says, many Americans are being done a disservice daily by Fox News and by Washington Times. Rupert Murdoch, and I'm not going to read this because I don't want to get into trouble, is a and should not have all those papers and TV stations. And that's from Rich. And from Isha, I'm with Joe, the Clinton Foundation charitable organization, a very effective one. I think everyone needs to get over it. Did anyone imagine he didn't have a relationship with the Clintons? That is fairly public information. I think the criticism and scrutiny of Hillary related to the foundation are also overblown. People can't do charitable work and other things. Thanks from Isha. And I believe that's it. Joe, do you see anything else?
I think that's good. Yeah.
Wait a second. John Henry did not shovel coal. Okay, that's right. John Henry did not shovel coal. He got coal, I think.
He drove the steam drill to the town.
He beat the steam drill down to the ground.
Right.
Right?
And then he had a myocardial infarction.
You got me, Tony, on points. No question. Okay, that's what I got.
All right. So let's go to, and I had it here. There we go. So we'll talk about the Andrew Cuomo job program. In May 2013, the New York Times reports this today. In May 2013, Governor Andrew Cuomo announced a program he promised would supercharge the state's economy and take job creation efforts to a level never seen before. Tens of millions of dollars went into advertising to push the program Startup New York. In the first full year of operation, the effort created fewer than 100 jobs. It has, however, attracted entrepreneurs. The pitch for the program, going on to the article, it says only 54 businesses were given the go-ahead in 2014 to begin operating under the program. Of those, 30 started operating, creating a total of 76 new jobs. Tens of millions of dollars, 76 jobs. Alan, what do you think?
Well, the whole thing is very controversial. We know that. So, for example, if you put, if you say to SUNYs, all the SUNYs, we want you to be hosting all of these business startups, and if anybody comes to work there, they're not going to have any taxes. Well, wait a second now. What about the guy who lives a mile away, who's also trying to run something? Now, I said this on this show. There's got to be a certain amount of resentment that happens as a result of this. But let's assume for a second that the governor is a good politician who wants to do good things for upstate New York, which has been an economic basket case for a long time, and is looking for ways to do it. And one of his people or he comes up with this idea. You really can't fault him until it turns out that it didn't work. Now, I think Tom DiNapoli, who is the controller and who came out with this report, and a man I much admire, has guts. You don't want to make an enemy out of Cuomo because, you know, he doesn't leave people standing that way. And we know that he's come after DiNapoli in the past. But this has been, this is really, on its face, not a good thing. And I know lots of professors who are feeling that the reason we have education at SUNY is to educate young people, not to turn SUNYs into business entrepreneurial places. That's all part of the mix.
Barbara, what do you think?
Doesn't make any sense to me, but my field is not either political science or economics, so it just doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. There was actually an individual that was described in the article who did move about a mile away from a main street to
a mile away.
Yeah, to one of those tax-free areas, which was on a university campus. So it's an interesting way to try to deal with our financial problems in upstate. And apparently, according to Comptroller DiNapoli, it's not necessarily working. Although they do say also that it needs more time.
Let's move on to other issues.
By the way, can I just say one thing, Joe?
Yeah.
Every time you got a failing program, somebody says it needs more time, right, Barbara? So for example, in all of those wars we were in, like the Iraqi mess, they kept saying, "Give us more time." In Vietnam, they said, "Oh, what we need is more time." So you sometimes you got to cut your losses.
Sounds like a plan.
Sounds like a plan. Here's an interesting story. This is in the Times Union this morning, and this is a story that we've talked about a lot and has some conclusion, as this has been worked on for a very long time. But news from the White House that the World War I vet Henry Johnson will receive a Medal of Honor, the nation's top award for valor. 97 years late.
It's about time, yeah.
But will happen. Johnson died in 1929. Will be awarded the Medal of Honor. And, of course, those who live in the Albany area know Henry Johnson both for the statue that is in the city and also for the Henry Johnson Boulevard, which goes through Arbor Hill. And there has been a campaign over three decades to have this honor. This has been going on for a very, very long time. And so, Barbara, I guess there has to be some great joy in this.
It's a great day. I was so excited when I found out yesterday afternoon. I just was, I was over the moon. Since I was a council member for two terms ending in 2013, Senator Schumer's office would let me and other elected officials know how that was going, particularly since I represented Arbor Hill, where Henry Johnson Boulevard is and where the park is with the statue, etc. And as I said, to find out that it finally is coming to pass, it's important for listeners to know that the reason that he did not get the medal at the time, and remember, he was a World War I veteran, not a World War II veteran, and even then he might not have gotten it, but in World War I and the racial social values of the society at the time, he didn't get it because he was black. And I was very fascinated to see in the reporting that a few years ago, I guess in 2002, Congress passed a bill that said, look at some of these cases of incredible valor of individuals who were black, Jewish, and Latino, who did not get the Medal of Honor. And they actually, in 2014, there were 24 Medals of Honor awarded, 19 to people who were black, Jewish, and Hispanic. Yeah. But Henry Johnson was not included in that. It's a fascinating story. I really encourage people to find the coverage about it.
Very interesting. And Alan, finally, before we go to Megan with a lockbox update, we learned yesterday some very good news for this. Do not think that the state Senate is not working for us, the taxpayers of the Empire State. By a vote of 60-0, the state Senate approved a bill that allows restaurants to welcome dogs, if accompanied by a diner, into their outdoor dining areas.
Oh, outdoor, thank goodness.
Whatever. Good heavens.
What do you mean, whatever? You don't have a dog, do you, Raymond?
No, this is what they agree on, Can they agree on something with substance?
I have to believe that dogs have rights.
Fine.
And
you also agree your dog speaks. So, I mean,
Well, he does. He does.
All right, fine.
What are you saying? He doesn't speak?
Yes,
well,
that's what I'm saying.
All I got to tell you is, when we were in France, everybody has their dog under the table. Right. Everybody.
In and out of the restaurant. Not just outside, yeah. But inside,
that's
too.
That's right. Whatever. That's right. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And you know why it was 60 to nothing? Because nobody's going to mess with dog owners. That's okay. Why.
Can yeah. I just
you
say.
Have to be crazy. To,
yeah. Counterview. Counterview. Sure. For those of us who have life-threatening allergies to pets, because, you know, I'm talking about asthma. I'm not talking about just sneezing.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, when I heard outdoors, I thought, thank goodness, because yeah. I can't be around animals, you know, in a closed space. So when it used to be in France, you know, or at least in Paris, where I've been on several occasions, they smoke like stacks.
Yeah.
And side of restaurants, and I actually had to go try to find a vaporizer when I was in France, not being able to really I drew a little picture of it so that I could try to get something so I wouldn't die over there.
Well, we don't want you to die.
So absolutely not.
But I want to bring my dog into a restaurant.
Yeah, and there could be special sections.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, you know, for people with allergies.
The Barkley section. I think we're maybe outnumbered here, Alan. But I agree with you completely.
Right.
Well,
what about that lockbox?
Well, one cynic. Yeah. What about that lockbox?
Yeah. Tell us about the lockbox. Megan Finnegan is here. She's smiling, so I think that's can only be good news.
Yep. We got $109,247 in the lockbox. A lot of people pledging online.
Cool.
Great. But a lot more to go, right, Alan?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm scared to death here. And how much do we need to get that extra $17,500?
How much is left to get to
the 375? How much do we need to make the challenge?
Oh, we need to make another $265,753 to get the $17,500, which is a combination of Mr. Big and First Niagara.
Yikes. So,
ladies and gentlemen, look, here's the deal. It is a lot, Ray. You're exactly right. I'm scared to death. I got a pit in my stomach about this whole thing. But I can tell you this. We make about $100,000 every day we're on the air. So now this should be able to be done if everybody just does something. Let Alan's stomach come back to reality.
WAMC.org, WAMC.org. We are woefully out of time. Yeah. We're into another hour, ladies and gentlemen. WAMC.org. Thanks to everybody. We'll be right back.